All right. Let's get fired up here.
Maximum freedom. Read.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom. Read Rothbard.
Welcome to the Actual Anarchy Podcast. This is our Halloween episode, and I'm going to stop talking like a moron for a moment here. We're going to get a little spooky around here and do a Halloween episode with Patrick and Lizzie McFarlane of the Unhallowed podcast. Pat, of course, is a friend of ours from the Liberty Weekly podcast. He's been a guest several times in the past. And tonight we're going to be talking about the Addams Family reboot that came out just last year and is currently available on Amazon Prime for your viewing pleasure or maybe displeasure. We'll see. We'll see how it stacks up against our panel of judges that we will introduce on the last episode of the show. This is episode 204, so you can find the show notes more at actualanarchy.com/204. And before we get into that portion of the show, let's check in with Robert, see how things are going in the business world there, my friend.
Oh, hey, buddy. How's it going? Yeah, I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me onto the show. Business is actually chugging along just fine for as limited as we can be. Got a couple of new, well, I've talked about them a little bit in the past, but our employees are really kind of gelling together as a group. So we're a well-oiled machine, but other than that, I don't know. Really, no. There's nothing new to report. Still just doing 2 days a week. Still shut down due to the Canada border shutdown that is still open for trade, but not open for quote unquote non-essential travel. Thank you, government overlords, for deciding what is essential and non-essential. I really appreciate that. But yeah.
So pretty good then. Sounds like you guys have any specials for the Halloween period that's coming up? Are you doing like a pumpkin spice pad thai or anything crazy like that?
You know, if Joy has anything planned, she has not informed me of her ideas. I doubt heavily that there's any kind of Halloween themed Thai food. I could see we do this one dessert item called Ka Nam Tom, which is these palm sugar wrapped in rice flour and coconut. And you could turn those different colors. Like she makes them, sometimes makes them green, sometimes blue, sometimes white. I'm sure you could probably use some kind of food coloring, turn them orange and brown or orange and black or whatever. But I don't know. They're not a huge seller. I mean, we sell a few a day. It's not, we could do it, not sell a single one that day, and no one would know we ever did it. So I'd be kind of useless.
So it would really just be a symbolic gesture, sort of like candy corn, which the proper way of eating candy corn, or so I understand, is to open the candy corn, put it in the trash, and eat a Reese's Pieces.
That's absolutely correct, sir. I don't know who invented candy corn. I don't know who enjoys candy corn, but it is garbage food for garbage.
All right, and with that titillating thing out of the way, we'll get into the last nerds portion of the show, introduce our guests, and get into this movie, The Addams Family 2019. Hey everyone, it's Daniel Elwood, and my co-host is Robert Paul Johnson, and we are the Last Nighters. You can find us on the Launchpad Media, where they're always launching new ideas in your direction. We're going to be doing The Addams Family tonight, the 2019 reboot that is an animated film, and we were also considering doing What We Do in the Shadows, the Jermaine Clement movie, but it didn't have a whole lot worth talking about, apparently, though I did watch it, and so maybe we'll sneak a little bit of that in. But this is episode 147 of the show. Find the show notes and more at lastnighters.com/147. Our guests, and that's a plural. I know I can't say guests very well, but one of them has been on the show many times in the past. He is Patrick McFarlane of the Liberty Weekly podcast. They have just launched a new podcast
he and his wife, Lizzie, called Unhallowed, which is a gothic horror podcast. There are 5 or 6 episodes in, and it's definitely worth checking out. I will introduce them now. And why don't you guys tell us, what is this new podcast about, and where are you planning on taking it?
Hey, guys. Familiar face here, Patrick McFarlane, and my wife, Lizzie, is joining me.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
So Lizzie has kind of sat on the sidelines and watched me podcast for about 3 years now. Mm-hmm. And I'm just really excited to have her podcasting with me now. And it's something that we have mutual interest in, not just neckbeard libertarian stuff, which she gives me lots of crap for, deserved. But we met in gothic horror fiction class at the University of Minnesota, and that's how we kind of fell in love. And so we're here now, and we're doing this show, and you can find it at unhallowedpodcast.com. The link will be in the show notes page. But we're really excited to join you guys, and I think this is the first time you've met Lizzie face-to-face, so it's quite the experience.
Absolutely.
Yes, my wife. My wife has been on the show just one time in the past, but it was not in the video days. So I don't know if she'd be comfortable being on. We'll have to give it another go. Hey, wife, what do you think, huh? So anyway, thank you guys for joining us. And that's unhallowedpodcast.com. And that will, of course, be on the show notes page, lastnarratives.com/147. And how we usually start this off, of course, is with the old Google description. So I will pull that up now. And away we go. So Addams Family 2019, budget $24 million, came out just last year. It's a family/comedy film, 1 hour, 26 minutes, rated PG. You got a 5.8 on IMDb, 44% Rotten Tomatoes, 46% Metacritic, and only 79% of Google users liked it, which in my experience is a pretty low score from the Google user folk. The description reads, members of the mysterious and spooky Addams Family, Gomez, Morticia, Pugsley, Wednesday, Uncle Fester, and Grandma, are readily preparing for a visit from their even creepier relatives. But trouble soon arises when shady TV personality Margot Needler realizes that the Addams eerie hilltop mansion is standing in the way of her dream to sell all the houses in the neighborhood. Came out October 11, 2019. Directors Conrad Vernon and Greg Tiernan. Box office $203 million. So they did make some money on this. Almost surprisingly, I watched this and I thought that it was almost like a saccharine movie. Like it's trying to be good, but it just can't quite pull it off. Let's go to you, Robert, for your opening salvo.
Well, this is a very tame version of the Addams Family. You're right. This is definitely aimed towards children. But usually, even in a family-friendly movie like this, you give something for the adults to enjoy, like maybe some jokes that'll fly over the heads of the kids so that the parents won't hate it when the kids want to watch it again. But this, man, I didn't see anything. I didn't see it for anybody. So I remember, you know, the original Addams Family. I'm talking about the TV show from the 60s. It actually had some kind of witty, like risque banter, some really kind of like funny one-liners and that sort of thing. And this is nowhere near that. Even the movie that I think was it Tim Burton who did it back in the 90s or something like that. I don't know. It was very Tim Burton-esque. If Tim Burton did it or not, I don't remember. But even those movies were a little bit darker, a little bit spookier, maybe a little not as funny, but I don't know. It just had a better kind of creepier vibe. Whereas this is very much, I use the word saccharine. I'm definitely using the word like tame or I don't know, just watered down, bland. It's definitely a movie that tries to be character driven. So you're trying to, you have these wacky cast of characters and, you know, you're into this Addams Family world, which is, you know, this weird mirror world to our own. And you're supposed to really enjoy the kookiness and the craziness and the zaniness, but it all just felt so blah. It didn't feel zany or kooky or weird at all. Maybe because, I don't know, we're so jaded and this is 2020 and whatever, or that I'm an adult and I've seen and heard way worse than any of this. And I know it's aimed at kids, but it just seems weird to have this kind of kooky, wacky, zany movie that's supposed to kind of entertain you in that sense, but you pull back away from any of the actual kooky, wacky zaniness with the like the biting humor or anything like that. So it just fell flat for me. It sounds like it fell flat for you. I'm curious to hear what our guests felt or thought, but yeah, this was a big fat stinker for me. So I don't know. I didn't even see a whole lot to even talk about. There was a few things that the whole premise of the film we can get into. Reading the Wikipedia last week, I go, oh, there's definitely going to be something here. Mm-hmm. And then having watched it, I'm like, I guess maybe, yeah. I don't know. We'll see what we can make out of it. What did you guys think?
Well, I mean, you know me, how I can stretch the littlest piece of something into a 30-minute monologue about the court system. But
oh, yeah, we know.
But I wasn't really a big fan, as I'm wont to do. I kind of found myself staring at my phone for large portions of the movie. Which, you know, it's a great movie for us to talk about on the show for Lizzie's first appearance. I think you like the show, though.
Well, I kind of looked at it as a primer for the Addams Family. Like, if you were, I guess if you were like really small, like a little kid, you could enjoy it.
I think there were pieces of it where, since I'm familiar with the Addams Family,
There was a nostalgia
in it. And there were some moments like where Wednesday was shooting the crossbow and hitting Fester, and he wasn't even affected by it. Like, I wanted to chuckle pretty hard at that. But yeah, I would largely agree. I thought it was kind of flat. I didn't like the Fester character very much in this movie. And I guess Christopher Lloyd he's one of my favorite actors, so I really liked him in the 90s one. But I must confess, I haven't seen the 60s TV show, which I should watch. But
you know, we saw, not you and I, but my family's children saw Bette, like, at grandma's house, like on Sundays. They played on, it would play on TV. And then watch the 90s version with Angelica Houston and Christopher Lloyd and Christina Ricci and a couple others. And I loved that movie. I love that movie still to this day.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a good movie to me. But yeah, I agree. It's definitely not something that has that wit, that biting humor, as you were saying, that has anything to really grab at you. It's forgetful. It's fluffy. It's, you know, you can't introduce these kooky, interesting characters and then have absolutely nothing happen with them. And, you know, in the day and time of trying to make fun of young kids for social media, there were a couple points in there where they brought that in, but that's just so old hat. Like, it's nothing new. It's nothing interesting or funny or attention grabbing. You know, and then they take the character Parker. I believe that's her name, Parker. And they give her like a goth makeover. And it's,
I really didn't like that, because I kept having this thought that now goth is mainstream.
Well, I suppose what bothered me about it was that you're like turning these things into like a novelty instead of, you know, you're talking about letting, I mean, I would say the whole point of the movie in a lot of ways was accepting the weird and the unique about people and letting people be who they are and appreciating them for that. And then, you know, there were elements of family, et cetera, but you can't do that. And then at the same time, stereotype and put, you know, the cheerleader character who's blonde and tall and thin and mean. And then the short, dark haired characters as, you know, becoming gothic and making it into this other stereotype. It's just, I understand why they do it, because it's like a familiar thing and stereotypes are easy and it's simple and shallow to get your audience to understand where you're coming from. But come on, it's 2020. Like, it's, that's so played out.
It's the current year.
It's current year, man. Yeah, you know, I think that they they were aware that it was current year, and so they were playing it very safe. And I think that's why they were afraid to go to those places that would have made it fun and given it some edge and given it some bite. They were trying to play it too safe. And it's sharply contrasted with even the 60s television version, and especially the early 90s movie versions, where there was that dark humor, that macabre satire that had a bite and an edge to it. And it's memorable to this day. I've seen so many times that scene from Addams Family Values where Wednesday's at the first Thanksgiving play, and the wokesters are playing it unironically. Like, they're posting like, yeah, she's right. You know, we did steal this land from the indigenous people, blah, blah, blah. Like, how terrible we are. White people suck, you know, whatever. But the having that in that movie at that time in 1993, when Addams Family Values came out, it was edgy. You know, it was funny because it was pushing an edge. And I think, Pat, I sent you, and maybe Robert, I sent you as well. Somebody on Twitter had found a note about the introduction of Gomez and Morticia in the first Addams Family from 91. He's like, hey, we need these characters to have this unbridled passion for each other, just bubbling below the surface, to the point that parents will watch this movie and get it. Kids will watch this movie and not, and be none the wiser. And he said, you know, if you don't do this, I'm fucking walking. I'm leaving this project. And you know, cause it needs to happen, because you have to have that contrast. You have to have something that's pushing something to make it interesting and unique and stand out. And I feel like that those two examples from the early 90s films just stand in stark contrast to what they tried to do here in this movie, let alone the muddled plot. I did not understand what the hell was going on or why. And I think, Robert, you were saying in the Wikipedia, it sounded like there were some property rights disputes and some, like, who was here first and how are we going to resolve disputes? But you don't really get that from the movie. So after you respond to what I've said already, maybe we can get into, well, what did you think, based on the Wikipedia, would be worthy of talking about?
Yeah, so you said a lot there.
Sorry.
That's okay. I'll just try and remember all the things I was going to say. First of all, I just want to address kind of like the film's quality. It definitely has that, the vibe of these kind of cheap, I don't want to say cheap, because there's a lot of, you know, talented artists that come together and they kind of put these, the animations and character designs together. And, you know, these people are talented and they do good work, but they are able to pump out films so quickly with such a high level of animation that it's getting cheaper and cheaper. And it seems like worse and worse scripts are getting through. Like, I don't know, back in the day when you just had Pixar and they could make one movie every 2 or 3 years, you really had time to refine the script and work on it. And these days it's like, well, we're pumping it out. We got to do this movie in 3 months. What do we got? Well, you got the Addams Family. They're kind of weird and kooky. And then we could have the flip side of that. We could have these straight-laced people. And then we could have them kind of both live in a similar world where the Wednesday feels, you know, boxed in by her kooky weird family, and you have to be kooky weird all the time. And then Parker feels the other way. And so then they switch roles, the old switcheroo. And then we, at the end, we all learn that it's okay to accept everybody for their weirdness and their whatevers. It seems a little bit on the lazy side, a little bit on the nose, a little bit obvious for an Addams Family film. But yeah, in the Wikipedia, it was talking about how this lady, the villain character in the film, wanted to build this covenant community, build her own private kind of community, and that the Addams Family weren't living up to the standards of that community. And as libertarians, constantly, you know, theorizing what a covenant community would look like and what would and would not be allowed and how would you enforce it. I don't think it would be enforced with trebuchets. That's just my general guess. Maybe the HOA would be packing some serious heat. I don't know, but I doubt it. Probably a lot more with social pressure. And then, I don't know exactly, but it's, you're right. They don't really get the sense that that's at the heart of the conflict. It's more that, hey, this weird family is driving down like property values, and like the kind of people that we want to come in and buy houses here aren't going to like this eyesore of a house on this hill. So we got to get rid of it or change it or get rid of these people somehow. And it just struck me as like a cartoon thing that would happen, not necessarily something. I mean, it's somewhat realistic, a little bit. Like if your neighbor is living in a dumpster fire house and you're keeping your yard all nice and tight and whatever, and you know, you're living in this community and you're like, hey man, you're kind of bringing this whole neighborhood down with your weirdness and your behavior, I guess. But I don't know. That's what I was hoping that there would be some kind of philosophical bent we could take on it. And I guess we could kind of extrapolate a little bit here. So
yeah,
I don't know. Do you guys have anything?
Well, based on just the Wikipedia portion that you were just talking about, I mean, it makes it sound like they were within that community and had agreed to the covenant and the rules therein. But what we see in the actual movie itself is they homesteaded or
squatted
and reclaimed an abandoned insane asylum that had previously existed for decades or more. And they had this fog that was surrounding this property due to the bog that got redeveloped by this company to be this planned community. Now, one would think that that would not be the best place to build. Also, one would think that they would be aware of this creepy mansion up in the horizon that would ruin the property values or whatever. Like, it seemed like, I know it's a cartoon, okay? I get that. But the premise is just so bizarre because they have to pretend like this creepy mansion was, no one was aware of it. And they have to pretend that the bog being cleared and these properties being built on makes the fog go away so that then it would be visible. Well, that time frame doesn't work. Like, you would become aware that there's this creepy thing here as soon as you destroy the fog making abilities of the bog, right? I mean, if in the world that we're seeing here. So I don't know. It just feels like an unbelievable scenario that's set up, and how the Wikipedia played it is, it sounds like they agreed to be a part of this community, but in the movie we see, no, they're not agreeing to be a part of this community. They just happen to be within view of this community, and that becomes a problem.
Right. And how much of a problem it would really be, I don't know. It's kind of a cool looking house from down low. It looks like a big old creepy, spooky house. It might enhance the eye-catchingness of some people. They might like to have that.
It was
there on
more
the
of an, it was more of an eyesore when it was an asylum.
Mm-hmm.
So sure. If it's anything, they improved the property. But the other angle I want to take, and we'll go to Pat because he's our property rights guy. The Addams family were using the fog to protect them and their kids from the outside world. This is sort of like an origin story for the Addams family. You know, this is Gomez and Morticia fleeing somewhere to then move to New Jersey, find this asylum that's been abandoned, squat in it, homestead it, reclaim it, rebuild it. And then they start having kids and they don't let the kids leave the property. Hello, 2020 COVID-19. I saw a parallel there.
M.I. Shyamalan's The Village a little bit.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But also they make mention of this fog being necessary for them to maintain the lifestyle that they want. So one would think that they would then have an interest in preserving whatever's causing that fog. And if they're aware that it's that bog creating the fog, I'm like a rapper and don't even know it. Wouldn't they then take steps to maintain that ability? Wouldn't they have a property interest or an interest in acquiring the property that is the bog so that they can still have the fog?
Pat, well, and another thing before you go to Patrick here, and I'm definitely going to let him talk, but
don't just hand me the mic.
How realistic is it? And I know it's a cartoon, like Daniel said, yes, it's a cartoon, but they've been living here long enough to raise their children. Wednesday and Pugsley are
12,
7, 8, maybe even up to 10, 12. Oh, they're in middle school, right? So yeah, 12 years they've been there. And You've never seen any of them? They don't go into town to go shopping? They never once? What? How do they get food? Where do they get stuff? How do they have money? All these things. I just have basic economic questions that are never answered in these films. And I know I'm not supposed to think that along these lines, but come on, 12 years and you never glimpse the weirdo that comes down from the hill to buy groceries or anything? All right. Go ahead, Pat.
Well,
Lizzie.
Yeah.
Well, they have the treasure. Coffee to feed to the, or to, you know, pour down the toilet for the spirit of the house. Like, where does the coffee come from? Do they grow that coffee? And then the other thing I was thinking about was, it really made it seem as they were introducing Margot Needler, like the villain, and her little crew and the
assimilation.
What was the town called? Assimilation. They made it seem like no one lived there. Like they needed to sell all the homes that were there and that no one lived there. It was this empty development. But then all of a sudden there's an entire neighborhood of people that have lived there for years. And again, that makes it even more like impossible that there's this family that's up on the hill. I don't know. You really had to suspend your disbelief, like vaulted ceilings suspend.
Yeah. And one thing I really kind of thought about was that I suspect. So at the beginning of the movie, the origin story of the Addams family is that they get chased out of everywhere that they are. And it was unbelievable for me that that would change. I mean, maybe after they get chased out of their wherever they are at the beginning and move to New Jersey, they've learned their lesson that they need to keep to themselves. But they just seem like such bombastic people. We know their characters that they would be unable to stay reclused away and hidden for so long without getting on someone's nerves or doing something diabolical. I mean, they're villains, really. That's kind of the point, right? And I would think that it's so paradoxical because they're nice villains. They're villains that are too nice to viciously guard their property interests.
And they do mention that they know the bog's there and that's why the fog is cleared, because they know it's because the bog has been drained. Like they say it, that they know that. So, and then the whole part of the Marsuka is protecting the family. Well, if the whole part is to protect your family and you know that the bog creates the fog that protects the family and you know the cat and the hat.
And the log.
And the fox and the box and two eggs, green ham. But you know that, like, if it's there, it's protecting them. So why, if it, there's this entire, bar mitzvah ceremony of the Marsuka to protect the family, then how is that not factored in at all?
Have they homesteaded the bog? Or you can enjoy, do they have some kind of an easement for the bog or some kind of a covenant with whoever owns the bog? Or who owns the bog would be the question, because
is the government involved? Is it protected land?
I mean, you could be someone that benefits tangentially because of the development of a next door lot. Like someone improves their house and it's more aesthetically pleasing. That raises your property value. So you could not own the bog or have any property interest in it and have it raise the value of your own property.
You know, it being a wetland, at least around here, I know that it would be considered protected, even if it was in your family's ownership for generations, and you couldn't do anything with it.
Right.
Oh yeah, you can't build.
Yeah, in this world,
I had a case like that.
Yeah.
Back at the first firm that I worked at, we had this issue with some family had an easement that ran through someone else's land, but they had cut off access and wouldn't let them improve the easement. So it got washed out by the creek in the winter and they had no way to get to their house. But they tried to come up with all these ideas to improve this roadway, but it was technically a wetland. So we were so limited in what we could do. And when you have two parties that just hate each other, you have limited options to begin with. So,
wow, that's interesting. That's like the donut, conundrum that they always talk about. And if we had a totally free society, you know, what if somebody bought all the land around you and you couldn't get in or out?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you need Walter Block to get on the case.
I'm sure Walter came up with this idea of an easement by necessity, is that you can't cut off someone's access to their own land. You have to grant them an easement. Mm-hmm. It's a little more technical, other stuff. But anyways,
But yeah, yeah. So yeah, it's also unbelievable that this property would even be developed upon at all. But even beyond that, and Lizzie, this is to your point, if that fog is super important to them and they're aware of it, then they should have taken whatever steps necessary to acquire that bogland to make it be not available to be developed on.
Well, you know, the whole premise is kind of ridiculous, though, that they've got this bogland that is protecting the family from anybody being aware of their presence. So they're just secretly hiding out in this hilltop mansion that as soon as a strong wind comes along is going to reveal them, or as soon as they get hungry and they got to go buy some food is going to reveal them, or they don't have, like, you know, Bram Stoker in Dracula.
This is right in their wheelhouse.
People, Dracula will have a thrall, and the thrall will go about and do the normal day-to-day activities that Dracula needs him to do, because Dracula can't necessarily go about and go down and buy groceries, but he can have his thrall go down and buy groceries. So why didn't the Addams Family have like some normal passing person that does tasks for the family? Then I would be much more on board with the premise of this thing.
Isn't that
they were trying to make, what's his name?
Lurch, right?
They were trying to make him as that character. They're showing him making food. They're showing him watering the plants, but in no way, shape, or form would a gentleman that looks like that going down to the grocery store fly by just as like a normal too.
Put him in a polo and chinos and then just have boat shoes.
I don't know. There's so much about this that just like absolutely makes no sense. Even how they introduce the character of Margot Needler in her show, they have it playing on the TV and Lurch is like cleaning up from breakfast and he turns on the TV and it's playing. So now they have television.
They have a bill that comes every month from the cable company. Okay.
And even where the house came from. So it's an asylum and it was abandoned, like completely. Someone owns that land. And if they're just out there and they homestead it, where's the legality in that? There has to be somebody somewhere that's going to come after that land at some point. Was it sold to Margot Needler? Because in that case, then she owns the land and she should be able to do what she wants with that house.
You could adversely possess it for a period of 15 years.
They weren't there. They were there for 13 years.
I mean, if they're in the UK, then I guess they would have squatter's rights and essentially own it. I've seen these Nightmare Tenant shows on Netflix back in the day before we canceled Netflix. That's right. Cancel culture came for you, Netflix. But it was a British show about nightmare tenants who would move in, destroy the place, stop paying rent, and essentially have squatter's rights. And it's like virtually impossible to get somebody out through legal means. It's very expensive and it rarely works, takes forever.
Time limit on in the UK when you, like, how long you would have to be there to be a squatter or to take the property?
From watching that show, it was like a vagrant could just enter an abandoned building and essentially have squatter's rights like shortly thereafter.
I've heard of that, and I was going to look into that before this episode, but alas, I did not.
That's the place to be.
One thing I wanted to bring up was that we were watching Hoarders Buried Alive on Netflix, I don't know, like 6 months ago or something.
An absolute classic.
Hoarders Buried Alive. And it made me think of this, because if you have the Addams Family, who are kind of like hoarders in a different sense, they're just weird people that are bringing down. Robert brought this up earlier. I don't know exactly how you would deal with it in a libertarian society. I would think that there would either be homeowners associations, but if you didn't get into that, I think there would be a home insurance company that would refuse to insure your property if you didn't clean things up.
Would you also be charged fees for the look of your property?
Who would charge it? Aside from the homeowners association. And could you just say, screw it, I don't want to, you know, because in this Hoarders episode, the community and the police had tried so hard to get voluntary enforcement, what they called it, and legitimately, like, I think they were trying to be nice and trying to be like, hey, how can we help you? how can we, you know, turn your life around and what can we do? And they just kept getting blown off and blown off and blown off. And then finally they're like, okay, well now we got to, you know, forcibly remove you and we're going to claim
$200 a day for the look of your yard.
What do you guys think?
Man, I don't know. That's a tough question. Exactly how, I mean, the real answer is we don't know. The market would figure it out if we actually had a free market. But all I can tell you from my own personal preference, as long as I am perfectly understand the what's expected of me, like I'm reading through this, you know, document that they've, hey, you want to buy a house in this area? This is kind of what's, this is exactly what's expected of you. And then there are also like, you know, bi-monthly meetings that you can take part in that we will pass resolutions that may or may not affect, you know, your, what's expected of you. That kind of strict, rigorous knowledge of the rules would appeal to some people and, you know, appeal less to other people. I would be less, it would appeal less to me if there was a strict line of things that, you know, said, this is what you can and can't do. And if the list is very, very long, I'd be like, no, thank you. I want to be able to buy my own property and do kind of what I want with it. Not that I'm going to like trash it or do whatever. I mean, I have the incentive to do with it what I want, but to maintain it because it, you know, improves the value of that property for reselling purposes and whatnot. But I don't know. Some people it might really appeal to. And it's always better when at least we know the rules, right? I mean, with government, you have all these millions of rules and you don't even know what they are. You have to hire lawyers even to find out if you've broken the law. But at least with this, it would be, you know, very clear. And I guess disputes come about when there's a, you know, disagreement over what the rules were and whether they were broken or not. And that's going to be the case regardless whether you have a government or not. It's just human beings. But so there'll probably still be some kind of dispute resolution, of course. And yeah, I don't know. What do you think, Daniel?
Man, it's a tough question. It almost makes you like question the idea of a stateless society in some ways, because there are people who just won't abide by the standards and the norms of a society or the neighborhood or whatever. And there are people who legitimately have issues that are mental issues or whatever that causes them to be a hoarder or not take care of property or whatever. So it's not like just ownership, the fact of ownership itself, though it incentivizes maintaining the value of that property and the aesthetic appeal of it, it doesn't necessarily mean that everyone's going to do that. And so it's a bit of a tough question. I mean, I think that zoning laws and having the current governmental structures that we have today kind of lend and contribute to certain problems that we see. And perhaps if there were fewer restrictions and regulations in place, then people would perhaps live in, you know, different arrangements further apart from people, people who wanted to not necessarily take care of their yards or had a hoarding issue, wouldn't, you know, be near people who would be bothered by that. Maybe there would be hoarder communities, hoarder covenant communities, something along those lines. And there would be other covenant communities of people who weren't interested in having hoarders or hoarder-like activities in the neighborhood. And so it's almost like you're saying, you know, we don't really know what the answer would be, but we do know that a multitude of opportunities would be made available and that people would self-segregate or self, you know, choose which kind of place they wanted to be in, which sorts of rules they wanted to live under. And so that you would have a closer interpretation through voluntary means of resolving these issues.
Yeah. I do. And there's all kinds of fun things rabbit holes we can go down. But one thing I did want to mention is that even though you have expectations of, you know, your neighbors and that kind of thing, you don't necessarily have a right to object permanence, right? So that just because of the way things are right now, and you don't have a right to keep things exactly the same, right? Like your neighbors are going to build like extensions on their house and that might obstruct your view of the lake a little bit or something like that. People are going to do what they can with their property, even if it necessarily doesn't, you know, isn't in your best interests. And I don't think you necessarily, it's not an aggression against you. So say the villain in this film was all of a sudden taken aback and felt aggressed upon, when the bog cover went away from the house, and all of a sudden she had this huge eyesore. Oh my God, what do we got to do? Well, I think in the real world, you would figure out why the bog cover went away. Like, oh, we drained the bog. Well, can we block up the bog and like fill the bog back in? Because then that would put the thing back, and then we'd all continue living along merrily and happily next to each other. I think that would be the best like dispute resolution solution there. But of course, this is a movie, and you have to have a big conflict at the end that involves trebuchets. So, yeah, I don't know what my point exactly was there, but I think there are cooler heads generally prevail in this kind of thing. And as long as you come into it with the idea that, look, we're all just trying to get along, and you don't necessarily have a right to keep things the way they are, that, I don't know, we'll have a more peaceful world. That sounds super cheesy. I don't know.
Well, I think too, we fall down this rabbit hole of thinking that things are going to be perfect when it's okay if there's no answer. I mean, there will always be problems with neighbors, and that's just the way that things are. And I think that the conflict at the end of this movie involved catapults and not trebuchets. Am I right?
Oh, you're right. No, wait, well, no. You're right. Yeah, no, technically you are correct. It was a catapult.
But it is a siege weapon. So
I had this other idea of something that I'm sure we can riff on was Mike Tilden, our buddy from the Battle for Liberty podcast. If you remember way back to 2014, I think it was, but we still talk. He lives in a homeowners association, and he says that it's worse than living under the state.
Oh,
so yeah, I've heard that. Yeah.
There's a parallel in this film with a homeowners association that has a complex surveillance system and surveillance state, and also issues propaganda and has this cloak and dagger kind of fake news type tank agent. So I'm sure there's plenty of fodder there.
So yeah. Why would I have to? I'd love to talk to him and ask him exactly why he moved there in the first place. I mean, was it just so nice, and he wasn't aware of the Machiavellian type actions that he was getting himself into?
I think he vaguely mentioned something about the like it being a good neighborhood, and there are, you know, something that I wanted. I know that you just introduced a lot of points that you're interested in following, but something that I was interested in was the school aspect of cage schooling your kids versus having them in a public school, and sort of like that whole idea there. And Mike, they homeschool their kids, and I think that that's a big reason why they stay or were there in the first place, because they do a lot of community and homeschooling, and that makes up for a lot of the draconian homeowners association rule.
So you're saying there's a cost benefit analysis?
Oh,
people are making decisions, weighing risks and opportunities. Yeah.
So you're saying that he was in the position to best judge for himself what was best for his family and what he was willing to put up with in exchange for.
Is this a libertarian thing?
I don't know.
Okay.
Yes.
It's an economic calculation.
Yes.
I just didn't know if I was like stumbling into like a trap there.
No, you're fine.
I was being
gotcha.
You're a libertarian.
You made a good point. I often say that Lizzie is a libertarian, but she refuses to accept it.
I don't like labels.
Which is just confirms that you're a libertarian.
Yep.
Yeah, lots of infighting. That also confirms it.
Oh dear.
You know, you mentioned the cage schooling, and I got to give this movie props that they did do a nice dig at public school by likening them to prisons.
That was, yeah.
It's jail for kids.
I laughed at that part, and then I laughed at the part where Wednesday says that she's going up against the establishment. Like, it's an actual, you know, like all these other things that are coming up and down in her life or just whatever. But the establishment, like, that's going to be fun. Like, maybe more of a challenge to her. And I laughed at that part, too. I thought that was cute.
Yeah. Now, did assimilation seem like to be an allegory the town of assimilation be an allegory for the government, the U.S. government being a overly involved in your business, overly regulating your lives, lying to you about the level of surveillance. Like you had mentioned, you know, they live in this HOA, but they're not aware that they're being spied upon all the time. And that there's this social media influencing that's happening. And actually somebody suggested recently that we do the social dilemma. And then I found a video that says, no, don't watch the social dilemma. Watch, what was that other one called? It's The Great Hack, where they talk about like how these tools are being used to basically do social engineering. Well, we see an example of that with the propaganda being pushed out by Needler through their little local social media, where she's ginning up animosity towards this group of people, the weirdos, the Addams family. But she's also doing the surveillance. And I just thought that that maybe was an allegory for how we all live today as Americans. You know, we're under constant surveillance. We're not agreeing to it, but it's happening. And yeah,
well, it also kind of insults like the average human's intelligence a little bit. Like the normie citizens of this area are just like these mindless automatons that are going to get a little order on their phone and all of a sudden they're going to grab their pitchforks. It was a little bit insulting. Like,
a little.
She was so easy to just gin up a mob. Like, look at these people. They're monsters. They're invading. Even though there's no evidence of it in their daily lives. Like maybe they saw a weirdo when they went to get their latte that day. Okay, how is that person a monster? What did he attack anybody? Did anybody get hurt? Yeah, they saw a weird thing. Oh, they were assaulted with their ocular cavities.
Yeah, has anyone like walked around a major city lately?
Filled with garbage and hobos
and feces and needles, like in San Francisco. You know, it's anyway. Go ahead.
Isn't this a little bit? It's a little bit right. Body shaming and like disability shaming? I don't know, right?
I definitely picked up really quickly on what I felt like they were trying to do with the social media posting and just riling everybody up right away. You know, I think that a lot of us have the benefit of realizing when we are seeing things on social media, the background behind it, or at least being able to separate our emotions to some degree. But we don't all fall on the same level of intelligence as everyone else. And I find that some people that I have seen on social media will get like riled up that quickly over something, especially when it comes to politics or and it's headline. It's not even reading an article or watching a video. I mean, it's a headline or it's a sentence with a picture and it's viral and it gets shared everywhere. And people are upset about it and talk about it with their coworkers and their family and friends. And so I guess I do agree that it was a bit insulting that they, you know, chose to make that comparison to the normal folks. But at the same time, it's happening. It's disturbing, but it is.
Well, I would argue, I'd push back a little bit on that. I would say that most normies will keyboard warrior for get outrage. I agree with that. You'll see some Twitter, you'll see some Facebook posts of very angry people saying making some crazy claims about what they would or would not do. And I take all of those with a massive grain of salt. Now, when it comes to young, angry, white, suburban, affluent, middle-class teens and young adults,
also known as Antifa,
exactly, also known as Antifa, then they are actually going to go out and pretend to fight in the streets. So if this movie is saying that normie suburban adults are Antifa, then okay, but I don't think that's the case. I don't think your average Antifa person has like a kid or a couple kids at home. Maybe they do.
Yeah, I think the difference, like the quote unquote right, they have more than likely, you know, in contrast to the other group who's out there in the streets doing these things, they have interests at home with a wife, kids, a house, property, you know, maybe an RV, a boat, whatever, you know, boomer shit that precludes them from being out there doing this aimless shit, feeling like a hero, playing, like doing this cosplay, and burning shit down. But I also think that we're presented with the townsfolk, and I'm sort of like going to try to straddle the line between the two of your guys' opinions on this. So I'm going to be like the movie and the script writers, try to just play it super careful between the two. But I felt like the townspeople were the blue-pilled normies who just buy whatever headline is on the TV media screen, you know, the CNN talking points, whatever. So not necessarily the ginned up, you know, Antifa types, though they do by the end attack the Adams family and you know, try to kill them. So yeah, I mean, they are actually like committing all this violence, but they were misled into it by this, you know, propagandist, this Goebbels of this community assimilation. And you know, speaking of Nazis, I thought the Gomez character looked a little bit like the Fuhrer, in my estimation.
I will say that this reminds me of an interview of the Todd Father. I don't know if any of you guys know who that is, but the Todd Father is a very famous comic book artist named Todd McFarlane. And there's an interview of him where he's talking about superheroes and his character Spawn, and how Spawn is a vigilante, and he actually kind of like supports vigilante activities through this character in this comic book. And his very first run, or the very first like couple issues of Spawn, dealt with this child molesting child murderer. I don't remember the name, but he like went around in a Mr. Icy ice cream truck and went around and preyed on kids. And Todd McFarlane said that, you know, if we had a problem like that in my neighborhood and, you know, somebody's daughters were getting attacked or kids are getting attacked, well, then he would just round up a couple of the dads and they'd go solve that problem. And you can imagine that you just wouldn't be able to find this guy anymore. Now, this movie, you know, they kind of play on that, in that there's some vigilante activity, right, by these people who's being ginned up by this villain character. But, and there's a difference in that the Addams Family, they don't assault anybody. There's never any kind of like misunderstanding movie, like where a person gets villainized for, like, you can kind of see it from one the other character's perspective, like, oh, he maybe was a villain, but oh, it was an accident. And then there's a misunderstanding, blah, blah, blah. But in this movie, there's none of that. The Addams Family don't get blamed for any real activity. You know, there's no Reichstag fire or anything like that. So how, you know, they are able to get these, the good intentions of this, of the dads that want to protect their families. It's a little bit of a stretch for me in this.
Yeah,
in this
that's segment. A great point. You know, if there was that ambiguous, depends on the angle in which you're viewing it, and the townspeople see it from the one angle where it looks really bad, but then you see it from, you know, the perspective of the Addams Family, and it's like a benign thing. That could have saved this movie.
Yeah.
A misunderstanding going awry could have been a much stronger impetus for this final act.
Well, one thing I kind of thought about, I was going to bring up earlier, is that I don't really understand quite what you meant, Robert, when you said it was insulting. Is it that like insulting the Nash, this idea that we're actually intelligent individuals, or just that the mob itself is dumb?
Well, I guess that that we're such slaves to social media. I mean, maybe a lot of people are, but from what I see when it comes to social media, someone will make some inflammatory posts and people will have strong opinions on it, but they wouldn't necessarily go to action. Like the average adult with a family to take care of, you know, needs to be pretty damn sure that they are really under attack before they go and commit murder, which is what happens in this film, right? You could easily have murdered all kinds of people with that catapult. Whereas if you're young and, you know, you have a 9/11 kind of event and you get a whole bunch of young kids that join the army to go kill people over in the Middle East, or you have a whole bunch of young kids getting radicalized in the universities saying that you're oppressed and that the white people are bad and blah, blah, blah. And you have to go down and burn down all these people in the name of Black Lives Matter or whatever. To just have somebody say, oh, there's monsters in our town. And then, oh no. And then, oh, we need to go do something about it. I don't know. It just didn't strike that real chord to me. There needed to be an event, an actual event that it reinforced their already held belief, right? You needed to see something. Yeah. There needed to be an event where the Addams family were like, they hurt somebody.
Right. Yep.
And then they get the information that goes, yeah, these people really are bad. And then it kind of just reinforces it, as opposed to just, hey, that was a weird guy. Oh no, they're really bad. Rah. I don't know.
I see what you, yeah. Well, I was going to take the inverse and flip it on its head, because what we've seen is this selective outrage in our society, where people are very upset about, you know, they're not upset about Daniel Shaver getting shot to death on his knees crying in a hotel hallway, but they are really upset about George Floyd, someone who potentially could have died anyways just from a overdose. You know what I mean? And like these things like Daniel Shaver happen all the time.
Weren't we upset about all of them?
Tony Timpa.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could name off a myriad of names right now.
Duncan Lemp.
Yep.
Duncan Lemp.
For a lot of people I've never heard of.
Yeah. The same as Breonna Taylor. But even more deserving than deserving of our I don't know if admiration is the right word, but our attention than Breonna Taylor. I think Duncan, from what I understand, Duncan's situation, he was a lot more innocent than it sounds like Breonna Taylor was. Mm-hmm. But because she has a different skin color, or because George Floyd had a different skin color, that's the one that you need to get mad about.
Right, because the corporate press decides what, you know, if there's a race baiting angle, then they're going to take it and run with it.
Yeah.
Because white people deserve it, or?
I think it sells for them, and I think they have an agenda.
It absolutely sells, and they have an agenda. I agree.
Division.
Way more clicks.
Yeah.
You feel like you're out of history being calling out the injustice. Whereas if it's just a white guy murdering a white guy, you're like, oh, there's no story there.
Happens every day.
So do we want to tie this back to the movie at all? Because we are near the end of our time. And we will get in a final summary and review, and we can give it a number of snaps, perhaps, because, of course, famously in the song, it's got the snaps in it.
Oh, the song.
Hey, you guys have done Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, yes?
Not yet.
Oh, okay. I want to say that there's a misunderstanding event that causes the all to grab pitchforks and.
Okay. Yeah.
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 You know what? May I just propose? You guys take guests, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That guy right there.
I don't know anything about Frankenstein. Frankenstein. I've seen young Frankenstein.
I'll get
there. Ooh, scissor. We're scissoring.
Oh, by the way, Robert, some people have seen our logo lately, and they commented this a few years ago, but they like the scissoring action of the A's.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
It's a popular activity among the ladies.
All right, so any final notes that anyone wants to bring up that maybe saves this movie at all before we get into final summary and review?
Again, I do want to like agree with Robert earlier that like you could tell there's talent in the animation. There's a lot of like famous voice acting. I really like sort of some of the reimagining and new ideas that they brought to it with like Wednesday's hair. The braids are in little nooses and the way they did that. And, you know, coming up with the like more of an origin story. So there are parts to it. Again, as I said at the beginning, it's sort of like a primer for little kids maybe of the Addams Family and maybe something to like introduce because it's so benign. But that's really all like my pros, my positive points.
Well, I'm going to nail back against that, because the one thing I hated the most about this movie is that it really seemed, I don't like this idea of accepting people for their differences per se, because once you accept it really seemed like it tried to mainstream gothic culture in terms of, I don't know, the whole point about being punk or about being metal is to be different. And I don't want to be celebrated for being different. I want to be like, fuck you, I'm different.
So you want to be different just for different sake? Or is there a reason you want to be different, or what's going on here?
I want to be, like, I want to be different because that's who I am.
Like you, so you like internalize the movement of which you relate to, and you show that within your clothing and your music choices, or what?
I mean, I suppose, but it's not supposed to be mainstream because it's supposed to be in opposition to the establishment.
Get room, you two.
He wants to be different, just like everybody else.
Now, oh, no, he didn't agree with my point.
Well, I mean, so anyways, but you know what I mean? Like this whole idea that, okay, well, it's like conservatism is the new counterculture, or this idea that Johnny Rotten from the Sex Pistols is now supporting Trump and all the OG punks are turning and against him.
Ice Cube.
Yeah.
Supporting Trump and 50 Cent.
50 Cent. Yep.
Because he don't want to be 20 Cent.
Mm-hmm.
Kanye and Kim Kardashian and all of these that, you know, are a part of that mainstream.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now, Pat, if I could ask you a question, if you are counterculture because you want to be yourself, but what if yourself is so fucking cool that people see you and they're like, damn it, I want to be like Pat. And so then that becomes the predominant style. Then what?
Then I'd become a straight-laced conservative with, you know, conservative Christian, just to be the other.
Okay. All right.
No, I think it's the most, the most consistent motherfucker, you know, but I don't know, you know, like, I guess the most punk thing is just to do your own thing and not give a shit what anyone else says or thinks.
Yeah. I mean, there's loads of memes floating around now of like, I'm so counterculture that I'm supported by all the mainstream media, the mainstream corporations, all the, you know, government talking points. But, you know, I've got tattoos and a nose ring or whatever, and I'm so badass. I've seen like 5 or 6 of those. They're quite funny.
Yeah, I enjoy them.
Anyway, let's get into final summary and review. And Lizzie, it kind of sounded like you actually mostly did one already. So if you want to just tack on to that a little bit and give us a number of snaps that you'd give this movie out of 10 being the best amount of snaps, and 1 or 0 snaps being like, this is a piece of hot dog shit. Okay. Let me know what you,
you don't actually snap. Have to snap.
I thought we were like, we're all gonna snap each other. I was like warming up my fingers.
You can do snaps, but you gotta like tell us how many too.
Well, I probably would say 4.5 snaps out of 10.
You could snap 4.5 times. That'd be fine.
Wait, 1, 2, 3, 4, and like maybe a half. I'm really bad at snapping. I can't do it with this hand. So that was a little anticlimactic. but yeah, I would probably say about like 4, 4.5. My 16-month-old really enjoyed parts of it. So I think I always like watching him like something. Maybe I got wrapped up in his reaction, and maybe that's why I'm giving it a higher score. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, seeing our kids enjoy things, I think does kind of hit you in the feels and maybe improve something's your take on something. But let's go to Pat, who might have a slightly different score. And what's your summary and review?
I don't know. I would say all in all, I don't know why we need to reboot things. I'll be a grump like that. Maybe they have to reboot it every 30 years because the show was in the 60s. They did the 90s thing, and now it's the 2020s. It's the current year. So there were points where I wanted to like it, and I wanted it to be a bit better. But I just have in my mind Christopher Lloyd and, you know, the 90s film. So I'd give it 3.5 snaps or 3 snaps.
Do the snaps. Yay.
So there
we go. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for those snaps, and thank you for the nudging. The loving nudging there, Lizzie. So I'll go into mine. I stand by my take that this feels like a very safe and almost woke, safeguarded like presentation of the Addams Family, where it loses most of the biting satirical humor, the pushing things to edges that we saw even in the 60s and especially in the 90s takes. It really feels like this was an unnecessary remake, and I'm not sure who greenlit this or why. I think that the 91 and 93 movies still stand very well on their own merits, and that they are, in fact, almost as iconic as the television series itself, and even with like more of pushing of the boundaries. And so just in contrast, this just really feels like it fell flat for me. I know that there's a lot of talent that went into this. The animation's nice looking. And from what I understand, just from reading some of the like reviews on Amazon, that this was supposed to be a return to the roots of, I don't know if it was like a comic strip or a comic book by Charles Adams. And that was supposedly what they were doing with this, with the intention. But with the convoluted plot and just the lack of having the bite and the satire and the humor and that edge of like, hey, here's the part for the kids. And here's this other level of the scene that's for the adults and only adults will get. It was really missing that. And so for that, I'm going to give it 2 snaps down. And we'll go over to Robert.
For a world, an IP that is all about dark, biting comedy, this is neither dark, biting, nor a comedy. I don't know who this is for. This is easily the worst iteration of the Addams Family. I get it if you're trying to generate, you know, you come out with some kids thing and then, you know, 20 years later, there's a whole bunch of adults that are nostalgic for that thing. Kind of like the whole market for the Transformers series of movies or any number like Scooby-Doo, all kinds of, you know, those properties that come back when the adults come out and they're in Hollywood now and they're going to make these things because that's what they remember from their childhoods. But it's definitely seems to me like a game of telephone where, you know, somebody who watched the original stuff called somebody and told them about it. And then they called another person and told them about it. And then they called another person, and told them about it. And so what you get at the end of it is some kind of Frankenstein version of the Addams Family where it's not, I mean, you could say it's like returning to their roots, but for me, it loses all the charm of what made the Addams Family the Addams Family. If you're not going to have the dark, biting, satirical wit and the, you know, the creepy feel, then it's not the Addams Family. I don't know what this is, but it's a cartoon for kids that is kind of sort of based on the Addams Family. It just isn't it. This is I gave it 3 snaps in a circle that goes down into a toilet that swirls around.
Right. It's a cash grab.
Yeah. And I mean, they made money, right? It was what, 30 million and it made 200. So good on them. I'm sure they'll, maybe in a couple of years, they'll make another one. It'll be Hotel Transylvania 3 or whatever. But I don't know it's just nothing there for a person like me.
Right.
Isn't a soulless cash grab so Wednesday though?
You know how you know the tell in this is Snoop Dogg playing Cousin It.
Yeah, you wouldn't even have known he was there. Yep. Other than the Snoop Dogg song that announced his presence and then he was in the credits. But it could have been anybody.
Yep.
For sure. Exactly. I remember we were looking at each other and we were like, Snoop Dogg?
We saw the name at the beginning and
wonder how much they paid him to do that.
Anyone could have done what he did in this movie.
Yeah.
He's your 16-month-old could have done what he did in this movie.
Better, in fact.
Better.
Yeah. So senseless cash grab. But it was successful. So the market hath spoken. Apparently they did something right, though for me, not a big fan, unfortunately. And I am a fan of the Addams Family themselves, though not like this diehard fan where I could, you know, pick out all the trivia and like, oh, they didn't get this right. Or, oh, I'm glad they did that homage. You know, I'm glad they did that. But just overall convoluted plot, cash grab style, and just not a good movie. However, I will say that it did have enough meat on it, especially with the Wikipedia description, to give us an hour plus worth of content. And we have more content for our Patreon supporters in what we call Kathleen Turner Overdrive, which will be coming up in just a few minutes here. And you can get a piece of that if you guys are interested by going to lastnighters.com/Patreon. send a few dollars our way and we will send you an all access pass to this Catherine Overdrive and 100 plus other ones that we've done over the past couple of years. Now, I do want to give our guests from the Unhallowed Podcast, Patrick and Lizzie, another moment to peddle their wares and where they can find, where you, our audience, can find what they do. So take it away, Mr. and Mrs. McFarlane.
All right. Thanks, guys. Well, we are doing a Gothic horror podcast where we review, read, and critique classic works of Gothic horror fiction. That'd be Dracula, Frankenstein. We're doing The Monkey's Paw. We actually just did Clive Barker with Nick Piccone of Sounds Like Liberty and Peace Freaks. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we talked about Clive Barker's The Hellbound Heart.
Or which Hellraiser.
Is
the hell, sorry.
Hellraiser. And I think one of the main points that I find in Unhallowed for me is to draw parallels between these classic works of fiction into like for a more modern audience and to kind of relate them to sort of things we are seeing come up now. For example, The Haunting of Bly Manor, which is on Netflix right now, is actually based on the works of Henry James, who wrote The Turn of the Screw. So hopefully we'll get to that in the next couple weeks here. But yeah, feel free to come check us out and spend time with us. We'd enjoy discussing how we met and one of our favorite hobbies with you.
And that's at unhallowedpodcast.com. Thanks.
And if you guys don't mind, would you mind telling me a little bit about the format of the show? Do you go through the entire book or do you break it down by chapter or what's the layout of the broadcast?
Well, we're still trying to find our sweet spot, so to speak. Because we read The Castle of Otranto and we read The Hellbound Heart, which were both novellas, and it was a lot to read in a week. Although we get into it and we kind of discuss the work, then we do like a plot summary as we move forward, a lot like your format here.
We have a format?
The thing that I would say that's a lot different than maybe some of the other at least like literature podcasts that I've listened to before is that it's not an entire like synopsis of it. We're not going
through the
point
by
point. Yeah. It's not an all encompassing thing by any means. So I think in a perfect world, you would at least know the work to some extent or know about it, perhaps read the Wikipedia article before. If not, actually read the works. But yeah, it's definitely not academic.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot like what you guys do on this show.
Is there a review portion? Do you give it like a positive review? You give it a star rating? What do you do?
Sometimes we forget.
I usually throw stars in there. I like 5 stars. I like to be like, oh, it's whatever out of 5 stars.
All right. So okay. Sounds good, guys.
I have listened to a few and I did find it kind of education or not educational. Well, I was learning from it, but I meant conversational. Like it feels like you're kind of hanging out with you guys. And I sort of like that style and that vibe. There's another podcast I've been listening to lately called the Not For Everyone podcast. Snobby Bobby has been our guest a couple of times in the past. He did The Patriot and Demolition Man. And because of that, I've been listening to his stuff. And yeah, it's just this conversational, like laid back thing. They spend probably half the episode before they even start talking about a movie, just ribbing each other and cussing each other out, which I find hilarious. And it makes me feel like Robert, like our format is just like, all right, let's get to the movie. But
compared to them. Yeah, absolutely. For sure.
But yeah, so it's a lot of fun. So I definitely recommend that people check you guys out. And this is the season for it. This is our Halloween episode, macabre, dark, murder mystery type stuff, gothic horror, definitely the time of year for it. And so I'm glad you guys are doing this together and it is a lot of fun to listen to. So I do recommend that people check it out.
All right. Thanks so much.
Yeah. And thank you.
Thanks for letting me finally be on and join the little boys club. I feel special.
Hey, are you guys going to do any, you guys going to do any Lovecraft? Got any plans?
Oh yeah.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah. I think the first one we're going to do is the Alchemist.
Yeah, the Alchemist. That's a good
one. How far out are you guys? Do you have your plan list?
This weekend.
Okay.
We're doing the monkey's paw.
Yeah, we usually have kind of like a working list of what's kind of coming up. I think as we get a little bit closer to Halloween, we're going to pick one of the big heavy hitters, something, you know, more along the Dracula or the Frankenstein route. We've both, you know, read them multiple times. So it's, you know, it's not going to be hard to pick things to discuss. So yeah.
Sounds like a lot of fun, guys.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to flip this over to Robert so he can tell you guys all the prizes you can win by supporting us the different ways you can do it on this fine Halloween episode before we get into that Kathleen Turner Overdrive that I teased you guys with before that hopefully our guests will be able to stick around for a little bit.
Well, you get all kinds of free spooky chills when you support the actual Anarchy Podcast on Patreon. Once a month, you will get a shiver up your spine and you won't know where it came from. You don't know how. You don't know when it'll strike, but it'll happen. And you will go, thank you, actual anarchy. Money well spent. And then you can also go to YouTube. And you can go to trusted.com. You can buy some merch there. You could, you know, you could subscribe to us. You could tell friends, family. You could actually come on the show. We've had many, many of our guests have been listeners who have suggested a movie that they are passionate about. And have come on and done a great job. We've had great shows. I don't even know if you could really point to episodes that are like, oh, that's clearly a listener episode. No, there are many talented listeners out there that have all kinds of interesting ideas. So if you have an inkling for a podcast show, let us know. Reach out to us. And there's a good chance we'll have you on.
Yeah, and just a quick shout out. I think the Addams Family was suggested by a previous guest who was on for Gentlemen Broncos, and I might be misquoting him, but I think it was Dirty J who suggested Addams Family and that we'd have something to talk about. I may be misremembering it, but just in case I'm not, thank you, Dirty J. Unless I'm wrong, then no thanks, buddy. All right. And so we'll get into the Kathleen Turner Overdrive right after this. You can find the show notes more at lastnighters.com/147. And if you're a listener of the Last Nighters, just forget all that actual anarchy talk Robert was talking about. It's a super secret club that you can join by going to actualanarchy.com and listening to an even longer version of this very show, where we have some pre-show that's not even bonus content. We have pre-show bonus content, then we have the actual anarchy portion of the show, then the Last Nighters, which you guys are familiar with if you're just Last Nighters listeners or on the Launchpad Media, where they're always launching new ideas in your direction. And then we do a little bit more at the end for actual anarchy, and then we get into the KTO, Kathleen Turner Overdrive. So now that I've broken it down for everyone, why don't we get to it? Kathleen Turner Overdrive right after this. Thank you guys for being our guests. Thank you for being our listeners. Happy Halloween and good night from last night. Peace out. All right, we're going to continue the transmission for just a few more minutes on the Actual Anarchy Podcast. This is episode, 204 of the show. You can find the show notes more at actualanarchy.com/204. We only have Lizzie for a few more minutes because she's going to have to hit the sack. She's told us earlier she had to go to bed about 28 minutes ago. So we're holding her a little bit long. But thank you guys so much for being on the guest now, being our guests on this episode. Now, there is a thing that I didn't ask in the show or didn't bring up. But there was a moment of eugenics in this movie. And I thought, hey, that's a bit of a difficult topic. So maybe we save it for the actual anarchy portion of the show. But there is, and I quote, and I'll go to Robert on this one. You are weakening the gene pool by digging up Pugsley after Wednesday had buried her brother in the yard.
Yeah, well, isn't it in the original, not the I don't think the TV show had Wednesday trying to kill her brother all the time, but the movies in the 90s absolutely did. She, you know, there's this fun sibling rivalry that they keep going back to. I mean, do you, when you allow the degenerate to breed, You have to come up with a final solution for these people, Daniel. So, yeah, you know.
Oh, wow. All right. We're going there. facetiously in World of Warcraft, everyone. We're not being serious. But that was the point that she was making, was that by saving him and him not being able, him being too weak to save himself, him being able to live on will weaken the gene pool.
Well, it reminds me of the great Ron Swanson on the character from Parks and Rec, where he has, like, you know, whoever is good enough will eventually kill him. Like, he's not going to die by just any old person. Like, so he's got, like, doesn't he have, like, some weird message that gets sent to the person that kills him? And he's like, the guy who kills me will know what it means. Something like that.
It's like, it's his part of his will. So there's the episode where he's going to get his will taken care of. And he's just, he's like, I leave everything to the man who kills me. And then there's a bunch of weird symbols. Like, what does this mean? Man who kills me will know.
So good. So good.
Awesome.
But yeah, that's kind of like a positive. Well, I don't know. It's kind of a eugenic thing, right? I mean, it's the survival of the fittest in a certain way.
Yeah. Yeah. That's almost a Highlander vibe. Like, you have to reach my level or be better than me. Like, he's thinking very highly of himself, and that somebody who's better than him, which would be a very rare instance, I believe, in his estimation, would be the one to take him out. But then he would respect that person for being at that high level.
Right. It's a form of self-love. It's recognizing your own worth, and that you only see a very few other competitors at your level. It's kind of narcissistic, but, you know, in a fun way.
Yeah, that's kind of the character that he definitely played in that. Unfortunately, he's very different from the character. It's almost sad when you see a character who has, like, such great content to work with. And yeah, they're sort of poking fun at the whole concept of being this ultra libertarian guy. But he does say some pretty great stuff occasionally. And to have none of that sink in is just kind of a disheartening situation.
Yeah, I wonder what some of, there's so many great, he's such an iconic character. He has so many great lines. That if you are of the kind of lefty bent that those writers were, if any of it, I mean, they had to have some kind of vague understanding. I mean, I know he's a caricature that they think a libertarian is, but to even come up with some of that stuff, you have to have some kind of appreciation for it a little bit.
Yeah, they get a lot of it right, I think, you know, like pretty close. I mean, they go maybe a bit far, but...
But that's the whole point of comedy.
Yeah, but they get the core, you know, they get the nucleus.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of Parks and Rec is just going... like a little bit further. So everybody's like, or the majority of everybody's like a caricature, right? But, you know, Joe was saying to me that he didn't like Ron because it was making fun of libertarianism. And I didn't really like feel that way, but maybe it's because I'm not a libertarian. I don't know.
Well, I've gotten a lot less sensitive about exactly... You know,
I thought it was like almost like loving, you know,
yeah,
kind of same way that they you know, have Leslie as this just complete like governmental sycophant. They have him, Ron, as, you know, that ultra libertarian,
her foil. Yeah.
Yeah. And but it's loving, like, and it's cute, and they always bring it up over and over again that that it's not. Even though there are aspects of it that are negative, it's a good thing. And it's just part of their personalities. And again, it's that whole love people for their differences thing kind of coming up again.
Yeah. And Ron Swanson, I love that character. He is, if anything, he is hyper competent. He is not like this bumbling boob. Yeah. He's a caricature, but he is probably the most competent character on the show. So I couldn't see it as, you know, insulting to libertarianism. I think he's a fantastic libertarian character in pop culture for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I love the episodes where he takes his privacy to the whole next level. He's, you know, takes his computer out and is destroying it. And he tries to keep everything off the grid, even his newborn son, and like is destroying his birth records and
he's got gold buried all over the place. It's great.
Don't be giving away my secrets, Robert. Jeez. But yeah, Ron Swanson's almost a how-to. Maybe a bit extreme, but yeah, pretty good. And I actually haven't watched a whole bunch of it. My wife watched the whole series, and I just by the fact of being around, caught, you know, maybe half of it. But yeah, I always enjoyed Swanson's character the most.
Well, there are some compilation clips on YouTube. You just got to Google it and you will find all kinds of the where they just grab out his greatest hits. Now, it won't give you a, it'll give you a good sense if you want to explore more. But yeah, I think the whole series is pretty good.
One of my favorites is the clip where he hands a piece of paper to the guy at the park ranger or whatever. And he's like, yep, here's my permit. I can do whatever I want.
I like it when he goes into the Home Depot and the guy comes up to help him. He's like, I know more than you.
I like the one where he gets, doesn't he get the gallstone and he's like stuck in his chair all day and night?
Yes. And he just,
but
sits
he's
there.
So tough because he refuses to do anything.
I love it with the one he goes into the restaurant and he goes, give me all your bacon and eggs. And he goes, wait. Now, I think what you heard me say was, give me a lot of bacon and eggs. What I meant was, give me all your bacon and eggs. I know what I'm about, son. I can handle it.
I love
so
that.
So good.
Oh, so, yeah. It's a good show. It's a good show.
So that was our episode on Parks and Rec, everyone. So you can find the show notes and more at actualanarchy.com/204. You can also support us on the old Patreon at actualanarchy.com/Patreon, as Robert lovingly told you on The Last Nighters. I do want to wish you a happy Halloween and highly suggest you check out the Unhallowed Podcast at unhallowedpodcast.com. You can hear more from our lovely guests. And thank you, Lizzie. It's very nice to actually be able to talk to you in person or virtually. I mean, this is the equivalent of in person in 2020,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
So
it was definitely a pleasure. I'm glad to have finally done it with you guys.
Yes. Thank you, Lizzie.
Yeah. We're all in this together.
We're all in all this. Right.
All right. Well, hey, everyone, check out the Unhallowed Podcast. And we will be back next week. Oh, man, I didn't mention this on last night's Sports of the Show. So Robert messed something up. I'm going to mess something up. It's going to bring equilibrium into the world. Next week, we're doing an election episode. Right before the election is our next episode. And either outcome, we think, or I think, it's going to be like the purge. So if Biden wins, if Trump wins, we're looking at the purge a few short days later. Therefore, we're bringing back the based Swede, Olaf the Anarcho-Viking, to talk about the Purge movie.
So the original or one of the sequels?
The original. Okay. Now, if you want, you can continue watching them. And, you know, we have The Purge Anarchy, I think, in the movie library. So check that one out if you want. You know, if you're bored, you want to get more of this mediocre slasher flick. But I'm going to focus on the first one. But it should be a lot of fun. He's a good guest. He was on for Miyazaki stuff, Spirited Away. He was on for what was that one with the first king or something like that, with the Robert the Bruce guy?
Oh yeah, the Netflix Outlaw King movie. Yeah,
the Outlaw King. And he was also on for, I want to say, Snowpiercer. So he's been on multiple times. He's always a lot of fun. And so that would be next week with the Anarcho-Viking for The Purge. And thank you again, Lizzie and Pat. Check them out, unhallowedpodcast.com. Also, Pat does Liberty Weekly, almost a sister show of ours. So go to libertyweekly.net and check that out. That has been revived. It's been reanimated. It's alive again after a hiatus. So very Frankenstein's monster has come back at libertyweekly.net. With also the great Keith Knight joining you for recent episodes. So I highly recommend that for everyone. And so I will finally say happy Halloween once again, and we'll see you guys next week. And we'll get into some Kathleen Turner Overdrive right after these messages. Peace out, everyone. Maximum.
Thanks, all.
Maximum freedom. Happy Halloween.
Chipmunks. CHIPMUNK. We're the chipmunks. Guaranteed to brighten your day. Doot, doot. Doot, doot, doot. Doot, doot. Doot, doot, doot.